rest of this hour. So rather than bringing Dee and Willa back on at this point, let's just go ahead and close out this hour. We will run our fall into winter tip. Dee and Willa, you have got probably 7 minutes or so to do what you need to do. And then we will be back for the third hour. We're going to talk about homesteadingconsultant.com and being self-sufficient. We'll talk about the animals. We'll talk about all kinds of other stuff. And we'll open the phone lines if any of you would like to chat. Oh, we'll also get an update on this Mr. Thomas for whoever's interested in that. We'll do that first. So stay with us. Animal World is here until noon. We're with Dee and Willa in the high desert of Arizona. Next and continuing right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK, FM 98.9, Digital HD3 Seattle.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk with Animal World's fall and winter tips for you and your animal friends. With the obvious change in our weather, getting colder and wetter, there are several things that pop into my mind that are important for you to think about related to your animal companions. The first is house training. There can be related problems at this time of year with both dogs and cats. Let's start with dogs. Many do not like to go outside in the rain or when it's cold. And do you really blame them? We don't like it much either. The biggest problem is usually the small breeds, younger pups and older dogs, particularly the spoiled and lazy models. But weather-sensitive dogs can be any breed, small or large, and they can even be created by their owners. Remember, dogs are monkey-see-monkey-doers, and they tend to copy our behavior. So if you're raising and educating a puppy in the house training department, most of you probably don't mind going outside with the pup to supervise and praise the good behavior when the weather is nice. But when the weather's bad, most of you are either very unhappy during the outing, or you don't go out at all and make the dog go out all by himself. Herein lies the problem. Dogs pick up and sense even subtle feelings from their people, and they may begin to associate going out in the rain or cold with bad feelings and not want to do it. If you make them go alone, they may not go all the way out in the yard. They'll hold it to deposit indoors when they come back inside. So think about this. When the weather is good, you go out with the dog, feeling happy and saying something like, "Oh boy, outside, let's go outside," and then go potty. Good go potty, good go potty. This is great, and the dog or pup learns to like going outside. But if the weather's bad and you have an attitude change, get grumpy, and on the way outside grumble something like, "Oh, yuck, it's rainy, it's cold, I don't want to go outside, I hate this, come on, bozo, outside, go potty." Even if you're only thinking this, pretty soon, when the weather is bad, your dog will be thinking, "Yuck, it's rainy, it's cold, I hate this, I don't want to go outside." And you will have created the problem. Now, this is easy to avoid. Keep this in mind when raising puppies or working with sensitive dogs. You can convince most dogs of anything if you have the right sales pitch. So the yuckier the weather is, the jollier you must be. "Oh boy, bozo, it's raining. Oh boy, let's go outside. Oh boy, oh boy." And act like you're going to the party of the year. You can even add a tasty little food reward. It must be given on the spot outside. This can make it even more positive. With medium to large breeds, this is usually only necessary during the house training process. Once the dogs get it, it sticks. But with small breeds and sensitive models, you may need to do a refresher course of outside and jollies in bad weather, and during the fall as the weather changes, to avoid a relapse in house training manners. Elderly and or invalid dogs may require this on a consistent basis. With all dogs, I think it just makes sense to have a wonderful dry-off and warm-up ritual after outings in the rain. Give them something to look forward to. And for seriously rain-sensitive dogs, they make doggy raincoats. Some even come with built-in hoods or umbrellas. Make a canine fashion statement in your neighborhood. And remember to tell your dog friend how fabulous they look. Now, let's talk about cats. They can be weather-sensitive also. Indoor-only models, not a problem. But indoor-outdoor models can have a problem, especially if you're used to a cat that always goes to the bathroom outside. The time may come when the weather is just too bad for them to be willing to go outside. So just in case, maintain an indoor cat box for emergencies. Also, cats that go through cat doors to boxes in garages or basements may not want to use them if it's too cold. Lastly, keep in mind that if your cat friend is older or has developed physical problems, they may feel too vulnerable to go outside, and an indoor cat box may be necessary. Next on my list is a reminder. If you are going to winterize your own car, please remember that antifreeze is extremely toxic and deadly for our animal friends, and it is also extremely attractive to them because it tastes very sweet. So be very careful with it, or better yet, use the non-toxic safe antifreeze. Another general tip, as the weather gets colder, if your animals spend extended periods of time outdoors, make sure they have dry and reasonably warm shelter and fresh, clean water, especially when temperatures drop below freezing. And dogs need regular exercise, even when it's cold or wet. Heck, so do we. So keep it up. Another interesting fact about this time of year is that all bodies, animals as well as humans, need more balanced omega fatty acids during cold weather to maintain good skin and hair coats. The easiest way to be sure your animal friends are getting enough is to add the Missing Link supplement by Designing Health to their food. The need for increased omega-3 and 6 oils in their diet increases even more as we turn the heat on in our houses because this can dry out their hair and skin. So avoid winter skin and coat problems with the Missing Link. Now, the last thing on my list is one of the most important, fleas. Even if your animals have been flea-free this summer, it's still important to pay attention now. As the weather gets colder, so do the fleas. Once the outdoor temperature drops consistently below 50 degrees, they cannot survive, so they'll be looking for a ride indoors. You'll need to prepare so they don't infest your home. If you have a problem with fleas this year and you want to get rid of them, now is the time to get serious. In either case, what you need to do is pretty simple. The best way to prevent an infestation from getting started or to eliminate an ongoing one is a safe, natural product called Fleego. Fleego is a powder that you sprinkle into the carpets and animals' bedding. It dehydrates fleas and their larvae, and it really worked. It's what I use to nip fleas in the bud in my environment. You can pick it up at almost any pet store, and fleas or not, keep Fleego on hand just in case like I do. Now, if you've got a current flea problem, once the Fleego is down, bathe and or spray your dogs and cats. You can get safe, natural sprays these days, then flea comb regularly until you're sure they are gone. And keep listening to Animal World because next spring I'll tell you what to do so you don't have a flea problem next year. Well, that takes care of my list for now, but stay tuned because Animal World will be right back.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
The following hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
Good morning, y'all. Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the third hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial, tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. And the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. And click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again. That will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. And, boy, we're on the downside. And besides being on the downside, I have to tell you, weather has not changed. At least Gary and I are convinced that it is now actually daytime in the Pacific Northwest. But the fog and the mist and all that stuff has actually gotten worse, not better. Our sunshine song didn't work today. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it's sunny at my house, Gary, and we just can't tell. So it'll be nice for the cats and the cat run when I get home.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't
hold your breath.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, I'm thinking not either. But at least there's sun in the high desert of Arizona, and that means that our friends Dee and Willa are here. And ladies, are you back with us?
I'm so sorry to hear about your weather, Martha.
Yeah, well, it's just crappy.
I'm very sorry, but you know what? We are really glad to have our chance at really beautiful good weather.
Well, it's supposed to be dry, and actually it's supposed to be like 65 or 67 by Tuesday here. So,
wow.
You know, we might have a few more days of some nice weather. Now, you know, we've been talking to you guys about what's going on down there in the high desert, and we've been starting to get into a little bit of the homesteading stuff. But apparently, Gary, somebody called that had been listening earlier. And what is interested, I think it was you, Willa, that mentioned a Mr. Thomas.
Tom Thomas. Tom Thomas has passed away now.
Ah, that's what they wanted to know.
Yeah, he's deceased. But he didn't make finished cards. He made, he was quite an artist and an innovator of training carts and wagons and breaking carts, and primarily what he specialized in was making rough carriages, rough wagons, and when I say rough, I mean rough, out of automobile parts.
Ah, okay.
And
well,
in
we
fact,
must have a listener, don't we, Gary, that knows who he is and was curious about whether or not he was still alive, huh? Yeah, all right. Well, anyway. So you said you have...
We're having a little... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're having a little dog difficulty? Is that the deal?
Just having a little dog rumble here. Our sweet and wonderful Cinnamon Bigfoot went to the vet and got spayed on Friday.
Oh, she did?
And
good.
Yes,
good.
Which we're very relieved to have that taken care of. But so she's getting pampered, which she's very happy with. She's with one of us. Constantly on leash because, she's kind of too big to crate. And so these guys are like, hey, how come she gets to be out there and we're all in the kennel? So
gotcha.
It was just a little family discussion.
I see. Well, and that's good because, you know, a big dog, after being spayed, they do need to be kept from over-exercising and, you know, chewing on their stitches and all that sort of stuff. So they need a little TLC for a while.
Well, let me clarify. It isn't that she's too big to crate. She's too large. The crate is too large to go in the motorhome. But she is crate trained. In fact, she's trying to get into my lap right now. She's absolutely, totally unaware of her size. She's 9 months old, 73 pounds, has a skull like an Irish setter, markings like a border collie, and jowls like a St. Bernard.
Oh, my.
And she's looks like she has quite a bit more growing to do.
And it sounds like she's a true example of a Heinz 57.
Oh, maybe Heinz 87.
Heinz 87. All right. Well, I'd let you all know, folks, any of you listening, if you have something to contribute to our homesteading conversation, if you have questions for Dee and Willa, or you want to know anything about animals for that matter, between me, Dee and Willa, we ought to be able to come up with an answer for you about training behavior healing questions or anything related to this whole homesteading business, and we're going to talk more about that now. But I'm going to give you phone numbers. Just keep in mind that Gary is the only one here to answer phones, so if the phone rings, he'll probably just put you on hold until he can run into the other room to pick up the line. So local number, if you'd like to call us, is 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. Toll free is 888-298-5569. Remember the 1-888-298-5569. So before we run out of time, why don't you guys reiterate for anybody that wasn't here the last time we talked about it, what is this homesteading consultant business that you guys have set up?
Well, the the fact of the matter is, we are indeed homesteading, as a matter of fact, in the true sense of the word, because we came out here on bare land. We fortunately had skills and knew what we were doing, and began a homestead, inclusive of gardens and getting a well in. And we did not go solar because we had access to power, so we brought power lines in. We brought internet lines in, high-speed internet. We've developed the land to have gardens and water flow. So it's not just a matter of plopping down on a piece of land and lo and behold, you know, instantly know what to do. There's a lot to it. And because of all of the calls we get constantly, inclusive of people that buy land on the internet and then can't find access to it, or they go to one of the group land tours where the realtors come out with the bus, gather people up from the city, take them out to a piece of, to an area in Arizona, and say, here, you can buy your 40-acre ranch. And unfortunately, people do. And I say unfortunately because there's a lot of research that goes into it. For one thing, one does not survive without water.
Yeah.
And water rights are a big issue. Not only water rights, about how water is designated, under what conditions and at what level, but how whether a well can be dug in that particular area, and if it can be, how far down is the water, and is it economically feasible, and then can it be pumped, and is it water that is able to be used for drinking, for livestock, for gardening? Some of the water is too acidic, some too alkaline. There may be high nitrates or nitrites. Some water has high arsenic levels. So there are a lot of things to consider, inclusive of land access. Unfortunately, some of the calls that we get from people that have purchased land on the internet, they fly out here and the realtor takes them out to see the property one time, and they've gone through a gate, they've come off a highway, they've gone down a dirt road, wound around for 5 or 6 miles in the back country, and come to another gate, and the realtor points across the field and says, there's your land. And then the next time the people come back, they find that the gates are locked and they don't know how to access it. Well, the reason is because they were never taken by their right of way. So just because there is a gate or a road, it does not mean that that is a legal access for that particular piece of property. And, you know, we have people that call us and we'll go out with our GPS and the plot maps and the all of the numbers that go along with the maps. And we'll be standing out in the middle of a ravine. And, you know, when we get back, we'll 6 miles from the highway, point across to the ravine and say, well, there's your access. Unfortunately, then it's not economically feasible, nor can it be engineered for access, for legal access. And so they purchased a piece of property no use to them. Right. And that they can't get anything else to.
Right.
I'd say probably 60% of this immediate area live off-grid. And I think the approximation, the county report, is something like 50% of the county lives off-grid. So off-grid means a way of surviving with using solar and also wind power. So now we're talking about ways to collect power, to create power for pumping water. If you talk to someone that's been in a power outage in the city, say for 24 hours, their life stops. They can't. They have no flushing commodes. They don't have running water in the sink. nine times out of ten, they have an electric hot water heater. They can't cook on their electric stove. Their air conditioning or heating is unavailable to them because it's electric powered. They have no electric lights. So think about, what is homesteading? Homesteading is learning how to live, not just survive, but live comfortably on a piece of land in nature, not fighting nature, but living with nature, with the planet, walking softly and living comfortably as part of your environment. And that's what we do, and that's what we teach others how to do.
Well, it was fascinating. I just listening to you talk, I honestly would not be a good candidate for just going online and to buy something. And earlier in the show, before you joined us in the news, animals in the news, I was talking about don't buy animals online. Sounds like we can expand that to don't buy land online without some serious investigation.
Well, absolutely. And we don't support buying and selling animals in general. We have come to a point where when we wind up rescuing an animal or an animal comes our way and needs a new home, we have found that giving an animal away sometimes is not the best option in terms of creating a value structure.
See, Gary, didn't I tell you? I mentioned this earlier today. We were talking about it because the Humane Society here had a free weekend of giving away, animals at the Humane Society, and they had the highest adoption rate ever. And I had that in good news, but I did put a little caveat about, there are those that talk about, when you give animals away, it kind of, in one sense, establishes a value, and people a lot of times are not as motivated to take care of that item if they get it for free. And if it happens to be an animal, the animals suffer.
Yeah, we're talking about living creatures that feel, have feelings and values and likes and dislikes. And people don't look at a dog and think, does that dog have value or does it think in terms of value? Yes, doggone it, it certainly does, because any living animal, and I'm off on a tangent now about buying and giving animals away and selling. I am so adamant about people raising dogs for resale and raising especially little exotic animals. I can't tell you how many times we have rescued everything from bush babies to hedgehogs because people don't have a clue. These are not pets, people. These are wild animals.
Right.
They should be in their natural environment. They are not for your entertainment.
Here, here. Here. Now, speaking of that, and when we get into the homesteading business, we wanted to talk a little bit about how animals fit into all of this. And of course, there's somewhat of a difference if you're homesteading in a situation like what you're talking about down there in Arizona, where you can actually buy lots and lots of acreage, or whether you're doing kind of a self-sufficient thing living in the city. So what kind of animals in both environments are good and supportive for this kind of lifestyle?
Well, a lot of cities are opening their zoning up to where people can have one or two sheep or a goat or a few chickens, and that's wonderful. But for the people that are living in cities and in counties where there are still very rigid restrictions in terms of what they term farm animals, one can still have, for instance, a large dog can pull a cart, and a large dog can pull a garden cart, and there are always large dog puppies available for adoption at the local pet rescues and humane societies. And
that's true.
They make wonderful dogs for watching the garden. And, small terriers are great to be trained to keep, if you have a fenced yard and a nice garden, they can be trained to stay out of the garden. They can be trained to keep a lot of the birds that are more of a nuisance bird when you're raising fruit or fresh vegetables. Just chase them off the garden patch. And they can keep the local cats away from urinating on the garden patch. So there are other ways to use dogs and still have pets and enjoyment in the city. But anyone can have a garden, even someone in a townhouse. A shoebox-sized plastic container can be kept for using kitchens, for utilizing for kitchen scraps, for composting with redworms, red wigglers, earthworms. That can be kept in shredded newspaper on the kitchen counter with a lid with perforations in it for air holes.
Do you actually raise worms on your kitchen counter?
Certainly.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Who knew?
I was wondering if I could jump in with a few comments here.
Sure. Well, of course.
This is Dee. I just wanted to clarify for people about this homesteading concept that you really don't have to run out to the wild outback and purchase 40 acres or 1,000 or even two in order to be homesteading. I mean, that's the rugged edge of it. But in this day and age, with everything that's going on in this country, we do a lot of research online on various topics, and what we are finding is that there is a growing wave across this country of people's consciousness coming back to wanting to know, where did my food come from?
Yep.
Who raised it? How did they raise it? What's in it? And is it good for me or isn't it? And I guess our concept about homesteading has more to do with self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and respect. Respect for the land and the environment, respect for the animals and the plants, and respect for yourself. And that there's some levels of farmsteads that can be maintained even in the city, even if you have just a little patio backyard or something. You can do a lot of things towards your own self-sufficiency. I mean, even if you're sitting in the middle of a city grid, you can run your own wind and solar power if you so desire. I would think under those circumstances it would be basically a matter of demonstrating principle or backup in case the rest of the system goes out. But you can also build little gardens in, you know, in barrels or in a bale of straw, and you can keep various levels of animals, as Willis said, depending on where you are. Some places are allowing chickens or goats, some places they're not. But
yeah,
another way to participate.
Up here in the Seattle area, you can now have chickens and goats and that sort of stuff in the city. It's great.
Some places don't want pigs because pigs are wonderful. They're very smart, they're very intelligent, incredible creatures, but they also usually draw a lot of flies, unless you're very, very careful about their environment. But there are other ways to do that in that there are CSAs, and I think especially in the Seattle area and places that are that conscious, you can find the CSA, which means community-supported agriculture, where you can pay a certain amount of fee up front at the front of the season to the farmer, and you participate in the farm by supporting that farm. You contribute your money, and then the farmer does all of the growing and the raising, and then you get your produce and your food back at various times during the season. So, and depending on the farm, some places invite you to come out to take tours or to help with the workload if you want to, or make it a real cooperative effort. So,
yes,
even
and
if
that,
you're
that
in a
goes
small
on,
spot,
on here, the Ananda community, I mean, my spiritual community now, they have a living community in the Linwood area just north of Seattle, and they have a little CSA going where, you know, you like just like you said, you contribute money, you can contribute time and helping to grow the produce, and then every Saturday throughout the growing season, you go and pick up your share of the produce, and it's really wonderful.
Right. So, you know, we're really willing to coach people on any level of this. If someone wants to call and say, gosh, I just have this little patio on the back of my apartment. What on earth can I possibly do there? You know, we can walk people through what to do so that you have a little more control over your food supply and growing things that are healthy for yourself And, you know, like Willa was saying about the earthworms, yeah, you can have earthworms, and having the compost and the earthworms in your kitchen is not smelly, and it doesn't take up very much space. You just have to know how to do it. And you can have hydroponic shelves, even if you have, you know, like a sunny window in your dining room. You can set up tiered hydroponic shelves where you can grow some of your own greens and your own vegetables. So there's lots of systems and ways to be much more in control and self-determining about the quality of your food.
Yeah, I was amazed with what you said could be done just with a bale of straw.
Willa, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, what? Maybe we lost Willa for a minute. But
maybe we lost her. I can see her out the window watering sunroof.
Ah, good. Well, I tell you what, it's a good time. We need to take care of our advertisers and sponsors one more time before we run out of time today. So let's do that so we're on schedule. And then we'll come back and Willa can tell us everything one can do with a bale of straw besides celebrate Halloween. So anyway, stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, since 1978, Puget Sound area animal owners have been able to depend on Jones & Company Pets for all of their animal care needs. At Jones & Company, their spacious store allows room for everything you need for your animal companions. You can find foods, accessories, fish supplies, supplements, cleaning products, and a whole lot more. The store within a store concept makes it easy to find the right products for your dog, cat, fish, bird, or exotic animal friend. And Jones & Company rigorously trains their staff so they can easily answer all of your questions. Now visit Jones & Company. You'll find them on State Avenue in Marysville. You can call them at 360-658-7817. At Jones & Company Pets, their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy and healthy pets.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs and prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Massage is good for everyone, including your pets.
Learn animal massage close to home at the Northwest School of Animal Massage. The Northwest School of Animal Massage offers a full schedule of classes, including massage for canines, small and large animal certification, and equine ligament therapy.
For more information, go to nwsam.com or call 877-836-3703. Locally, call 425-222-3703. That's 425-222-3703.
Join their Facebook page for exciting announcements and the latest class updates.
This new year, give your dog, cat, or ferret the gift of great health naturally. Make NuPro all-natural supplements an essential part of your pet's diet. NuPro makes an awesome gravy sure to please. This gravy provides fresh nutrients for a beautiful, silky skin and coat, a strong immune system, and a healthy digestion, among other wonderful benefits. NuPro's joint support formula is perfect for working dogs, large breeds, and especially seniors. So go with NuPro, your pet's best friend for over 20 years. Go to NuProSupplements.com for more information. That's NuProSupplements.com.
The latest must-have for dog owners is a custom-made Breeze Guard, a powder-coated welded wire mesh screen that quickly and easily fits into your car's windows. Breeze Guards keeps your dog in the car with the windows open, keeps strangers' hands out of the vehicle, and gives you peace of mind that your dog is safe and happy in your car, parked or moving. Go to MuttManagers.com for complete product details and information on ordering Breeze Guards. Your dog will love you for this. Check out MuttManagers.com.
Are you worthy of being happy? Oprah Winfrey says worthiness is your birthright. You are worthy of being happy. Robin Alexis would be privileged to assist you to embrace your worthiness and help you get and maintain a happy life again. You are invited to post in Robin's private online soul spa forums and share with others what inhibits you from feeling worthy to live a happy life. Soul Spa members, people like you, have signed confidentiality agreements to keep all the communication that happens in the Soul Spa. Let Robin Alexis and Soul Spa members help you move from breakdowns to the miracle of breakthroughs. As you participate in the Robin Alexis online Soul Spa, you will liberate yourself and feel worthy of living a happy life again. Visit robinalexis.com for more details on the special offer of a reading with Robin and a 1 year's membership to the Soul Spa. or call 360-457-2993. Embrace your happiness now.
Feed your mind and your body and spirit will follow. Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk. I want to say thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And we are, fortunately, because the sun disappeared up here, we're in the sunshine down in the high desert of Arizona with our fascinating ladies, Dee and Willa, and we're talking about the homesteading in the country, in the city, kind of being self-sufficient and more responsible for what you're eating and all of that good thing. So, Dee and Willa, are you still there?
We are.
All right.
Actually, I think Dee is giving instructions to one of the delivery people on how to get here.
Uh-huh.
And
so you were going to tell us all the things we could do with a bale of straw.
Right. And straw is a live organic product, so it will nourish a plant as it decomposes. So if one takes a bale of straw and a large serrated knife will work fine. A bread knife works great. And taking a three-wire bale of straw, and it can be oat straw. It can be any type of grain straw.
Okay. I didn't realize there was more than one kind of straw.
Yeah, there's wheat straw, oat straw, milo. There are several types of grains that are grown, and the grain is thrashed, and then the stem is cut and baled, and that's a secondary product of the grain. So that's also an income product. A lot of times it's disked back into the ground, but most of the time in today's economy it's baled as a secondary product of the grain.
All right, and so in people, even in the city, you might have to go a little bit out of the city to get a bale of straw, but most feed and grain stores, you know, you can go, you know, buy one and it'll fit in the trunk of most cars, huh?
Absolutely. And you can take a piece of, if you're concerned about getting the straw in the trunk of your car and not being able to vacuum it, just take a piece of plastic and a large plastic bag cut open and laid down, or a $3 tarp in the back, and just lay the straw on it. And
yeah, that's
that
a good
works
idea.
Quite well.
Right. And, do you have any idea what a bale of straw weighs?
Not really. Probably
not as much as a bale of hay.
Okay, I would think it's lighter weight, isn't it?
Yeah, probably about 30 pounds.
Yeah, okay, so not bad. All right, so then, so what do we do with a bale of straw?
Well,
excuse me, but I need to jump in here for just a second, folks.
Yeah.
The feed delivery guys just called,
uh-huh.
And they're going to be here in about 15 or 20 minutes, so we'll probably have to cut loose Willa at that point to go show them what to do.
Well, that's going to be pretty good timing towards the end of the show, so we're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
So anyway, back to straw.
All right, so taking a bale of straw and putting it on the patio or in the yard, depending upon, now you're going to be watering a plant, so keeping that in mind, you want to think about where is the water going to go. And
right.
It's going to be absorbed to some degree, but some of it will be runoff. So if you're looking at a patio, you might want to find somewhere that has pallets and maybe get someone to cut a pallet in half for you, someone that has a skill saw, or even just take a couple of 2x4s and nail them together and make a little frame, because you're going to set about the size of the bale of hay, and that way you can put a piece of plastic down first, and then some absorbent fiber, and shredded newspaper is great. So shredding newspaper, put that in the little frame on the plastic, and then set the bale of hay on top of that.
You mean the
and
straw,
now you
right?
have like a little
yeah,
2x4.
Yeah, the bale of straw, right, yeah.
Right, I mean your bale of straw, yes. And now you have a little catch basin underneath that will help hold moisture, and that's also where your worms will like to be.
Oh.
So as the straw decomposes, then the worms will have food, and it will provide, in turn, what the worms excrete will provide nutrients for the plants that you're going to be growing. So now with a serrated knife, one can cut a little square, about a 6-inch square or circle, out of the hay, out of the straw rather, and you can just go down through the straw bale, and you might be able to put, since it's a 3-strand bale, you'll have 2 sections in between the strands to be able to grow in. So you can probably cut 3 to 4 little hollow outs with your serrated knife and take that straw out and put it underneath the straw bale where the newspaper is.
Okay.
And now you have a planting medium to put seeds in. So the first thing to do is begin to water in each one of those compartments and just lightly sprinkle down across the full bale of straw. And within a few days, you'll see it start to soften and shred and kind of begin a slight decomposition. And now you have a little hollow to either do transplants or to put seeds in. And if one's putting seeds in, then you want to take a little bit of what's underneath the bale and use that to cover the seeds.
So what kind of things can you grow in a bale of straw? What kind of seeds are you talking about?
Peppers, celery, any kind of greens,
really?
Ornamental flowers, beans. Black-eyed peas grow well, any kind of beans, really.
Now, I think maybe the last time we talked, we didn't talk as extensively about a bale of straw, but did you mention you can grow potatoes in them, too?
Absolutely.
Wow.
You can grow potatoes. You can grow sunroot. Some people call them Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes. We like them because they help balance insulin, and it's a root vegetable. We use them instead of potatoes.
And what's that called again?
Jerusalem artichoke, sunchoke, or sunroot.
I know what an artichoke is. Are you talking about a real artichoke, or is it different?
No, the root, actually, artichokes are above ground.
Right.
These sunroots grow below ground,
okay.
So they're a root vegetable, and the root itself actually looks similar to ginger root.
They're also known as sunroots or sunchokes, and they can be seen in many, many parts of the country along the roadside. They grow wild real easily, but they're a great survival food because they grow easily without a lot of care, and animals like them as well as humans, and they're also a very good substitute for potatoes.
So how do you eat them? How do you cook them?
They can be eaten raw, like an apple.
Really?
Or they can be cooked. They can be used in place of water chestnuts. They can be sliced and stir-fry, or they can be boiled or pressure-cooked to be like a mashed potato.
Wow. Now, do you think we could grow those kind of sunroot things up here in our climate?
If they don't rot.
they do. They do grow in Washington.
Okay.
They
cool.
would need good drainage so that they don't rot out.
Well, now I'm wondering if because it sounds like this, you know, the straw as a growing medium sounds like a really neat deal. And for people that don't have any, you know, garden space, you know, or ground dirt, sounds like you could have quite a nice garden, even in several bales of straw. Now, if you were going to grow potatoes in a bale of straw, would you need to have just like one bale of straw designated for potatoes?
Well, if you were going to have a little bit larger garden, you could put 4 bales of straw in a square.
Yeah.
And fill the center with some good solid dark dirt. and preferably some compost, some dirt that has been composted down, and potatoes can be grown right in the center, and then your greens and peppers can and beans can be grown around the perimeter in the bales of straw.
Oh, that's a cool idea. Wow, so there's really a lot of ways to grow a lot of your own vegetables and stuff.
Let me just throw this question in for a little clarification and discussion. Mm-hmm. What if one had a bale of alfalfa hay instead of straw? What would happen?
Alfalfa is very high nitrogen, and it's usually baled. Sometimes it's baled by crimping, sometimes not, but they tend to mold. Alfalfa tends to mold without air circulation.
That's right, it does. Because when I was feeding horses, you had to be real careful about hay molding.
Right, right. And alfalfa, clover, Timothy isn't quite. Timothy is a little bit drier, and so is Bermuda. So you don't tend to have the problems with Timothy or Bermuda. But any kind of clover, fescue, or alfalfa, because of the nitrogen and the rapid decomposition, it tends to mold first.
Now, would that be a problem? Can you still grow things in a moldy bale of hay, or are you just better off using straw?
You're better off using straw.
Okay.
Mold presents problems, health issues for animals and people.
So the mold could get into what you're growing?
Well, it can get into your lungs.
Okay.
So mold is grown from spores.
That's
and
true.
Mold spores can be inhaled, and that is not a healthy situation.
Okay.
So one wants to avoid anything that is going to decompose from moisture in a manner that creates the mold spore. And alfalfa is a very deep green and high nitrogen hay, so it supports mold spores.
Gotcha. But you can use in bales of hay. You can not only do potatoes and all these sunroot things you're talking about stuff, but you can also do lots of greens and salad type stuff.
Absolutely.
No,
and
now what
tomatoes.
About you could do tomatoes? What about could you do something like carrots?
Carrots could be done in the center of the straw.
In the center, okay.
Right, in dirt. Carrots tend to not survive well. It's a root, so the carrot tops would be all right. But as far as developing a sizable solid carrot, they don't do well where they're exposed to some sunlight, the root itself.
Okay. Well, then what about like radishes? Would they have to go in the dirt in the middle, or could you do like radishes in a straw?
I do radishes in the center.
In the center, okay.
In the dirt.
Now, what about things like kale and the big leafy greens? Could they go
right
in the straw?
Right in the straw. That's wonderful.
Wow.
You could do cauliflower, broccoli. That can all be grown in the straw.
Well, how neat is that? You could have, like I said, that's really wonderful. Now, I'm a little curious about, especially since you've got probably more city dwellers around us listening than country folks in the cities, and since we know here in Seattle where people can have chickens and goats and stuff now. We're all over the factory farm industry for not caring and giving a good enough quality of life, you know, to the chickens and, you know, some of the animals that we raise for food. How much space do you really need, and what do you need to provide for these kind of animals in a city environment for them to have a good enough quality of life?
Well, if we're talking about chickens, there are many varieties. And I recommend the Banty varieties and the smaller varieties of chickens that can be used for laying and also used as fryers if one wishes. But if you look it up, you'll see that what they recommend is 1 to 3 square feet per bird. I do not buy that. I think birds need to move, and if you are living in the city, you're not necessarily fenced so that you can allow your chickens to forage without the neighbor's dog grabbing them through the fence. So I recommend if you're going to have a foraging area, have covered movable cages, and you can pick chicken wire in 1x3s and make a nice frame, maybe 4 foot, a big 4 foot square that two chickens could forage in, so that one can move that around. And if you have a chicken, if you have a mesh bottom, they're going to grab using the large mesh on the bottom and the small chicken wire on the sides. And when I say large mesh, it's something like used for lath work. It looks like chicken wire, but it's a very large hole. So the chickens can grab bugs and roots and grasses through that. And one has to keep in mind, if they're having their chickens in what you call a mobile cage during the day to get them moved around to forage, be careful about where you're allowing them to forage, because even if you're not spraying any kind of pesticides or anything to prevent fleas or ticks, or any kind of pest in your own yard, the neighbor very well may be spraying in their yard. So if your neighbors are using pesticides or herbicides to prevent weed growth along their sidewalks, be aware of that so that you pay attention to how you're watering and how your neighbors are watering, because the water can come down from a neighbor's yard that's using pesticides or herbicides.
Oh, come down into your yard.
Right. And then if you're allowing your chickens to forage in that area, you have a problem.
Yeah.
So those are things that need to be paid attention to. But if you can take a small part of the yard and have, so if you have a 4 foot square foraging cage, 4 foot square for two chickens is a pretty good size area as a rule of thumb, because they need the height as well as the width. And if you're looking at hens for laying, they'll require shelter for year-round shelter. But once again, looking at banties are good layers, they're good setters. They have beautiful feathers, and they're easier to keep in small areas. They don't require the heavier feeds or as high a protein feed, and for laying purposes. And they also tend to set on their eggs if you're looking to hatch some out. They're much better setters.
So
I could just jump in a couple of comments here on this topic. Those mobile cages are often called chicken tractors.
Chicken tractors?
Yeah. and they're really good in your garden area at the end of the season. You don't really want to do this during the season because you don't want them eating your kale and your broccoli. But when your garden is finished, if you can take your chicken tractor, which is your cage with your chickens in it, and move it around from one spot to another in the garden, they'll till things up and turn over the soil and eat all the bugs and the larvae that are left, and then fertilize the garden for you.
I was going to say, chicken poop is good fertilizer, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so having them in the garden at the end of the season in whatever manner, if you're able to just turn them out in your garden when you're finished with it, they will help to turn the garden over and prepare it for you for the following season. And the other thing about, you know, the chickens having space is this isn't just for their mental health, which, of course, is important. But aside from that, it's also a nutrition factor. I mean, these chickens that stand in these big, huge chicken factories shoulder to shoulder and can't move an inch or else they're in cages that are no bigger than their body. And the same thing happens, you know, with the cows and the pigs. They are not only is that mentally unhealthy, but they're also physically unhealthy. They're constantly pumped full of antibiotics to prevent, you know, diseases, and then they have to be pumped full of artificial chemicals and things that because they're not able to get the natural nutrients from their environment. So animals need to have enough space on healthy ground to be able to get the nutrition that they require in order to be healthy, which then in turn creates healthy food for the human.
Good point.
It's now, an integrative system.
Now,
it,
so know, then what about, together. Before we run out of time, because it seems to be chickens and goats that most people are having in the city, how much space do goats need and what kind of an environment to be healthy for them?
Well, once again, it depends upon the size of goat, which is determined by the breed. And what I recommend for city dwellers, there are several varieties, several breeds of smaller goats that can produce meat and milk, like the African dwarf goat is able to produce meat and milk. And they can be kept in about a 20-foot square. And as we're speaking, I see my feed truck coming up the road, and that means the dogs will be barking and shouting very loudly. So I'm going to say goodbye and look forward. I enjoyed the show.
Well, thanks so much, and we'll talk. Dee, can you provide us with contact information and so forth? Because, you know,
yes,
we're almost out of time anyway.
Okay, I'm heading for the truck, so we'll be out of range of all the dogs yelling. I'll lock myself in the cab for a minute. And contact
do thank Willa for us, and we'll just have to pick up where we left off next time.
Okay. As far as contact information, our very brief at this point website that Rhonda, the webmaster, is going to elaborate this for us, and soon we will have educational videos up there as well as blogs and articles on different topics, but we're just getting started on the website. But you can find it at www.homesteadingconsultant.com. And there is a little telephone at the bottom of the page that if you click on there, it gives you instructions on how to make an appointment if you would like to speak with us for some personal one-on-one consulting.
Click on the telephone.
You can reach us by email at homesteadingconsultant@gmail.com.
All right. I will give folks the spelling of that and so forth. But it's basically go to the website, and then if you'd like to set up a consultation, you click on the telephone on the website, and that will give you the instructions.
All right. Yes, that would be it. Now the feed guy sees me out here, and he's coming the wrong direction. I'm going to have to go send him towards the barn.
Okay, well, we can let you go at this point. Dee, thank you so much, and thank Willa for us, and we will talk to you again soon.
All right, have a beautiful day.
Yeah, well, yeah, you enjoy the sunshine for us.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. And that, of course, is Dee and Willa from the High Desert in Arizona. And you can see that they really are a wealth of information. So if you want to do some homesteading, if you want to do it big time, if you want to do it little time, if you want to start some home gardening and you don't have a lot of space, they have answers. And what creative thinkers they are. So if you'd like to check it out, the website is www.homesteadingconsultant.com. And that's homesteading is STEADING, homesteadingconsultant.com. And their email is homesteadingconsultant@gmail.com. homesteadingconsultant@gmail.com. All right, now let me remind you that next week is the fourth Sunday in a five-Sunday month, and that means it's Kim Sunday. So Kim Miller Medium and Animal Intuitive will be in the house, and, of course, we will have open phone lines throughout pretty much the entire show, usually starting by, 9:30 or so in the first hour. And, of course, you know that, in my opinion, she is the best medium around. She is practical, she's logical, she is grounded, and she is extremely accurate. She can help you communicate with your animal or human loved ones on the other side. She can also help you communicate with your animal friends that you currently live with and answer general psychic questions. So, Kim Miller Medium is here next week, and I hope a surprise guest that you'll be surprised to hear again on the air, and I'm excited about that. And Gary, thank you very much. We'll see you in a week. Stay tuned for A Psychic Speaks. Get ready to call in because they'll want to hear from you. And as always, let me remind you, animals have feelings too, so treat your animal friends better than family. And please always be kind to open your heart, share your love with all living things, and I'll talk to you again next week.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied.